The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by 5 local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Public Library.
Good morning. You're listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. We've got the Book Nook coming up. I'm Vic McCunis. It's always a pleasure to interview an author who has just published a first novel. And we've got an interview like that coming up in studio. Astrea Taylor will be joining us to talk about her novel House of Transformation. And this is quite a story. It's the tale of a rock musician, a music star, who is having a lot of difficulties coping with life and her friendships with some other women. That's all coming up in the Book Nook this morning. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Astrea Taylor. Her new novel, House of Transformation, just came out, and she joins us in studio. Hello, Astrea.
Hey, Vic. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been waiting to have you on the program for quite a while. I can remember, gosh, it seems like it's probably been over 10 years ago, we had a brief conversation where you said you were planning on writing a book, and I said, that's great. And here it is. I don't know if this is the book that you meant at the time, but this is your first book, right?
This is my first published novel. I was also writing another one in conjunction with this one at the same time, and I'm actually working on that one right now as well. But this is my first published one, and it's kind of been a dream to see it out there in hardback or paperback form in hard copy.
What was the process like? Has this been in a drawer somewhere? I mean, where did this come from?
Yeah, it has been in a drawer. You know, I had a lot of inspiration over the years, and I think I started writing this in 2005, maybe 2004. And over the years, I've been studying, picking up little pieces of how to write a novel, because I've actually never gone to school for this. I'm self-taught, but I love to read. And so I've been doing my research and watching videos and going to seminar, little classes online and things like that. And just trying to figure out what this story really wanted to be, to make it interesting and entertaining, and at the same time have the messages that I really wanted it to have. So, yeah, it's been a long process. I started writing this on a very old computer with a free word processing program, and that computer died. I still had the file, so my husband actually saved it. He converted it to a Word format. But I've been through a lot before this was published. I went through graduate school, getting married, having a stressful job or two, and then finally having a stable job and finishing this out.
Astrea Taylor joins us. Her book is House of Transformation. Doing all that research and all that independent study, what did you learn about how to write a novel?
I learned that I didn't know anything about writing a novel. That's the easiest thing to say about that, I guess. And I wish I had gone to school for it. It's a really complicated process. You have to hook the reader pretty quickly without giving too much away in the beginning. You have to keep the action running and the dialogue snappy and kind of like draw a picture in just a few words and also add to the emotional tension. And then that has to drive the whole book from the beginning until the end.
There is an awful lot of emotional tension in this story. Let's give our listeners some sense of what the story is about.
Okay. There's a pop star named Ananda Dawn, and I like to say she's bigger than Britney. Everyone knows her as a first name celebrity basis. and she's famous for doing some crazy stuff in the media. At one point, she hoodwinked the Little Mermaid and sang at Disney World and sang her part for her. She has been caught in some drug scandals, and at the airport, she crashed her car, most recently, when the novel starts, into the Eiffel Tower. And she blames it on the paparazzi, but really it's because she's been self-medicating with this prescription drug. It's one I made up myself. It's called Xyratav. And she's kind of been just taken to that edge. The paparazzi are just driving her crazy and following her everywhere. And she's at that breaking point. And then so after she crashes into the Eiffel Tower, France is like, you know, get out of the country. So she goes back home to St. Paul, Minnesota, and she visits her old best friend, a therapist named Mag Woods, and she asks Mag to help her.
And you wrote this segueing back and forth. We start having these flashbacks because Mag has a history with Ananda, and there have been some issues here because Ananda was kind of an overnight sensation. Her first album was huge. She's kind of been on a downturn since then, but she's a celebrity now, and once she became a celebrity, she kind of forgot about her friend Mag. And then there's a third woman involved. It's sort of a triangle here. Do you want to talk about her?
Do you mean Kitty?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you were mentioning we have a dual timeline there, and you really get to learn a lot about these women when they were 7 years younger, how they first meet, and the things they go through together, the things that they Mag is trying to be an artist. Her parents put her through college, and she just graduated, and she's kind of sick of college. So she tries to be an artist, and Ananda's there to help her and let her meet all these people and help with the art show. But then there comes Kitty. And Kitty is a really complicated character. She's got a lot of angst, and she's a little bit obsessed with Ananda. She's not really that good for her, but Ananda is really nice to her anyway because she knows that Kitty will spend all of her money on her and take her anywhere she wants to go. But Kitty inserts herself into these women's lives over and over, and she's just kind of a terrible influence.
Mm. The book is House of Transformation. Astrea Taylor wrote it. She joins us on the program in studio today. Ananda can be somewhat manipulative.
You could say that. I think it's really fun to write that kind of a character, too. You know, a character who lies and calculates and tells people what they want to hear. It's really kind of spooky how they can get under your skin if it's a real person, but it's entertaining if it's in a book.
She certainly seemed like a real person who is famous like this and an overnight sensation and has a drug problem. I mean, she seems very real to me. How did you get into her head?
I kind of studied Amy Winehouse and Whitney Houston, and everyone knew there was something wrong with these ladies, and they were still going on this downward spiral. The media was making them seem like they were monsters at the same time, still putting them up on this pedestal, and I kind of tracked their careers as they declined, and eventually, you know, we all know what happened with those, and so that was a huge inspiration because I didn't want to see a celebrity that happened to a well-loved celebrity again. So I wanted to show what could happen, what might happen if one of those well-loved celebrities might have actually gotten the help they need instead of descending into this bad place.
And Amy in particular, Amy Winehouse, was such fodder for the tabloids. And the tabloids and the media are really a big part of this story, aren't they?
Yeah. The tabloids, the paparazzi, they follow the women everywhere. They're on their every move. There's one of the characters is this character we like to call the greaseball, Richard Chirco. He's a paparazzo, and he's one of the worst ones. He's the one that exposed Ananda when she was just first an ingenue. Mm-hmm. And she has a lot of run-ins with him.
He's the one who's out there along with a lot of other people camped out in the parking lot when Ananda shows up again in St. Paul at Mag's doorstep. And they're essentially prisoners after that for quite a while. And the thing that was kind of funny to me was that Ananda lives in this sort of cocoon. So when she shows up there, she's not aware that Mag has written a book. Do we talk about this?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So when Ananda shows up on Mag's door, one of the reasons Mag doesn't want to help her is because she's written this book about her. Mag is a therapist, and you're not supposed to do this about people if you're a therapist, but she wrote a book basically defending her time with Ananda because Ananda's biography painted her as this crazy person because that's what the media wanted to mm-hmm. hear about Ananda. But Mag really wanted to defend herself. She found it was hard to get a job because she was known as like what not to do as far as being a psychologist or a therapist. And so she wrote this book basically saying this never happened and Ananda has sociopathic tendencies. It was really fun to write.
Yeah, I could tell. The book is House of Transformation. Astrea Taylor wrote it, and Astrea lives right here in our area. She's a Daytonian. And,
yes.
And this is her first book, so this is pretty exciting, isn't it, to have it out and be able to hold a copy of it and go into a bookstore and they have a copy of your book in the store? It's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Right now I have 4 stores that have the book, and I'm excited to say that because it's always been a dream of mine to see my book in a bookstore, pick it up. So it's in Epic Books, Blue Jacket in Xenia, Jay and Mary's bookstore in Troy, and also Clash Consignments in Dayton in the Oregon District.
You've been busy.
It's been an adventure.
I can tell. Well, we're going to continue our conversation with Astrea about her book, House of Transformation. In this next segment, we're going to find out what the House of Transformation was. That's all coming up on the Book Nook right after this. Welcome back to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today we're joined in studio by Astrea Taylor. Her novel, House of Transformation, has just been published, and it has a very cool cover. It's one of my favorite covers that I've seen in a while, and it shows a house that is being transformed into what looks like a flock of ravens. There's something almost Edgar Allan Poe-ish about this cover. Tell us about the cover.
Thank you. Well, I designed the cover, so I appreciate that. My husband is the one who actually did the graphic design on it, so I have to thank my husband, Tim, for that. Yeah, and then I wanted this nice, rich monster green, you know, an alfalfa green. Mm. So you see the green and fading down. But I wanted something really graphic to describe what was going on because the house in and of itself is a character too. Mm-hmm. The house goes through a huge transformation. At first, it's this like empty home and there are all these potential dreams in there. It feels like a safe space. But then the people who live there start to uncover some stuff. They find out a ghost that lives there that they can communicate with sometimes, the slight paranormal aspects. Mm-hmm. And then the house actually goes through this terrible process at the end where it kind of reflects the energy of the people who are there, and it has its own demise. But it's what haunts them to this day. As well as some terrible tragedy that happened there.
The story of the house reminded me a little bit of a lot of legendary kind of commune houses that you read about back in the 60s and 70s. It's got that vibe of kind of anything goes, and then at the end it just kind of melts down.
Yeah, I actually did a paper on communes in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
And that is a common theme with those. I would say that's apt.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of people in and out of that house. And it's a very mysterious kind of place as well.
And Mag and Ananda live in the house. And they are collaborating on artwork together. And you talk about this artwork a lot. And they're making collages. And I'm guessing that this is a form of art that you're familiar with because you wrote about it so much.
Yeah, I love collages. They're beautiful. They're really inspirational. And, you know, they're somewhat like the lazy person's genius. You can just cut out anything out of a National Geographic or a, you know, a beautiful home magazine and put it together and find some meaning there. It's a great artistic outlet.
It's a form of visual sampling.
Mm-hmm.
And they make these collages, and Mag is hoping that she can support herself through her artwork. And they meet this guy who has these art, I don't know what you call them, these art gatherings. And this guy, I love this character. This guy is out there. Tell us about him.
Stevie is... I don't know how to explain Stevie. He's this wild person who has such these passions of art, and he actually designs kitchens, and he's an interior designer, so he knows about some of this stuff. But he kind of wants to help people and put it out there, but at the same time, he doesn't want to give too much, and he gets really angry when things go wrong, and they inevitably go wrong because he invites everybody, and everybody shows up. And he's continually pranked by these people who just have no respect at all for what he's trying to do with art.
Oh, those pranks are atrocious. Astrea, do you want to give our listeners a little flavor of the story? Could you read an excerpt from it? Is that something you feel like doing?
Sure.
Okay.
I could read the prologue.
Okay.
To kind of get you an idea about Ananda. Ananda dreamed she was lying on a warm beach, a sweating cocktail in her hands. That is, until she lifted her head from an overblown airbag. Black smoke erupted from her crunched Mini Coupe rental. The smell of burnt rubber scorched her nose. Broken glass from the windshield lay all over the dashboard and in her lap. Over her steering wheel, just a couple of feet away, she saw the chipped gray building she must have hit. What had she done? A tap on the window startled her. She looked up and saw several people gathered around the car, shouting her name. A camera flashed, and then another, momentarily blinding her. Ananda, are you hurt? Ananda! Fear electrified her. She couldn't let them know she was as high as the next solar system. Yeah. They'd smear her all over the tabloids again if they caught the slightest hint of anything scandalous. Getting into a car accident was bad enough. She unclasped the seatbelt and rummaged around on the floor until she found her signature giant sunglasses. With trembling hands, she slid them on. The voices continued, some of them speaking French. Did she lose control of the car? Do you think she relapsed again? Ananda knew she had to get out of the car, but she didn't want to. Why couldn't she just go back to the beach? She wiggled her fingers and toes. Except for a few gashes on her arms and a headache, nothing hurt too much. Nothing was broken. She grasped the door handle but stopped. The paparazzi were already there, and they'd capture every angle, every moment. She found her purse on the floor and pulled out her favorite lipstick. With a deep breath, she willed strength with every stroke of rapturous red, and then finger-combed her white blonde hair. Ananda opened the car door onto a gray morning and a crowd of concerned faces. A policeman helped her step out onto the pavement in her Louboutin heels. Cameras flashed. She popped glass shards from her blouse and tugged down her miniskirt. "Are you injured?" an officer with a French accent asked. "I think I'm okay," she whispered. A microphone plopped in front of her face, and she turned to it, channeling as much angelic energy as she could muster. A paparazzo with greasy brown hair a nice suit barged in front of everyone and shoved the microphone aside. "Ananda, are you sober? Did you relapse again?" he asked, a grin on his face. She ground her teeth. So the greaseball wanted to fight. Didn't she have a restraint order against him? Are you afraid you'll go to jail for what you've done? He asked. Her eyes darted to the car, smashed at the bottom of a building, but there was no blood, no body. She slowly let out her breath. She hadn't hit anyone. Although she could have, she should have been more careful. She barely remembered getting in the car after her liquid lunch. Miss, what happened? The officer asked. Someone blinded me with a camera flash when I was driving and I couldn't see where I was going, she said, hoping it sounded true. The policeman nodded. It was easy enough to believe. For years, she'd been running from the paparazzi, ditching them down side streets and entering restaurants and clubs from the rear. It was so exhausting. She rarely went out anymore, for fear she'd end up on the National Enquirer again with a bad picture and a worse caption. "Do you know where you are?" he asked. "Of course I do," she said. "I'm in Paris." "But do you realize you've crashed into a national monument?" "What?" She looked back at the wreck. She'd hit a building, hadn't she? Then she noticed the building was topped with a gray crisscross design in steel that swept upward for several stories into the sky. She gasped. "No," she murmured. She ambled toward the Eiffel Tower and ran her hands along the stone base. It was like a Zyrtop dream, except it was real. She tried to focus. Had she really jumped the curve and drove into the park? She looked around. The traffic on the Quai Branly had come to a halt. Horns blared, and still more people arrived and whipped their phones out. She turned back to the crowd. The policeman shook his head and said something into a walkie-talkie. Multiple cameras flashed. Ananda could imagine the cover of the magazine now. "Ananda collides into Eiffel Tower. Police blame drugs." She swallowed. How was she going to get out of this? She had to spin it to her advantage. In the distance, sirens wailed. The blue twinkling lights of an ambulance approached. Reporters fired questions again, but one voice trumpeted out above the others. "Would you like to say anything about the hazards of drinking while intoxicated?" the greaseball asked. A plan came to her. It was so crazy, it wouldn't work for anyone except the most beloved of celebrities. That had been her once, before the media twisted everything she did. She hoped she could pull it off. "This may sound crazy," she said, trying out her best publicity smile. A shush ran through the crowd. All eyes were on her. Ananda walked out of the shadows of the Eiffel Tower and into a beam of sunlight. She gazed directly into an HD news camera. "This may sound crazy, but part of me always wanted to crash into the Eiffel Tower."
Astrea Taylor, reading the opening of her book, House of Transformation, as we meet her her wild and reckless music star. And Ananda is so quick on her feet. I can picture that whole scene streaming on TMZ. The whole thing.
I watched a lot of TMZ to study for this. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I've met a few celebrities in my life, but I've always played it really cool. Even when I was like, oh, I know that person's face. I've never been one of those people who were going gaga over them because I don't think that that's very nice, you know? Mm-hmm. But you see it on TMZ that these people are just treated like demigods almost. It's really strange.
In that excerpt, you referred to this drug, one of two drugs that you made up in the story. Are these drugs like any drugs that we know? One of them seemed maybe like it was kind of like ecstasy.
I
don't know that from firsthand experience. I'm just guessing from the effect. One of them kind of speeds a person up and the other one slows them down. Is that right?
Yeah, they have a lot of weird effects. And the first one, Zyrtop, it starts with an X. I think some of the symptoms are kind of like ecstasy, perhaps. But at the same time, I think there are other symptoms that may not be like that at all.
Uh-huh.
I think they're definitely hazardous kind of drugs that you're not supposed to take unless you're prescribed them. And then the Clemerol is a little bit milder version, I would say. In fact, you know, Kitty, the bad influence, brings Zyrtop, and they're saying, "It's the new Clemerol," and some of them are really excited about that. But our main character, Mag, has already kind of sworn it off.
And Mag, who has known this rock star long before she became famous doesn't really know her because her background is completely mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, when you meet somebody, especially when you're in your 20s, you can be somewhat overly trusting, and especially if someone has a lot of confidence and glamour about them. Like, you do want to believe the best, but people lie. People don't always tell the truth about their history, and they can paint you a really pretty picture, but it might not be the truth.
Mm. Mag is telling our story from these two different chronological viewpoints, the present, ongoing, and 7 years before, ongoing. And you have a really fun time juggling these perspectives. Was it difficult for you to bring these two segments together and make them link up?
It was a little difficult because there are some secrets that can't be revealed until a certain time. And there was a lot of fact-checking and going back and making sure I didn't give anything away too quickly.
Mm.
And I had to write two separate plot lines for each of those to really bring the heart out in both of those stories, which I felt it deserved.
Did you get to the point where you just sat down and said, okay, I've got to finish this?
You know what really helped me do that is the NaNoWriMo. Have you heard of that? The National
Sure.
Novel Writing
Mm-hmm.
Month. I had started this story, like we said earlier, in 2004, 2005, and had written it by hand and then entered it into a computer program that stopped working.
Uh-huh.
And I got the computer program back up and working October 2013, and I used November is the National Novel Writing Month. So I used that to finish writing it.
In case you've just tuned in, my guest is Astrea Taylor. Her novel is House of Transformation, and this is her first book. And as she's indicated, it took a while, and it finally was released. It has a great cover, and this is a real page-turner. I enjoyed this story a lot because you really build the tension in it. And that's so important in a novel, to have that dramatic tension. And Mag knows better than to let this woman back in her life. But she does it anyway. And we all can relate to that. We all know that experience of getting a phone call and maybe you have caller ID and you look at it and you go, oh my, look who's calling me. It's like, do I really want to pick this up? Do I really want to open that door that's been closed for all these years?
Yeah, I think Mag wants to help people, and that's one of her faults, is that she really can't stand by when somebody is damaged and is asking for their help. She works at a runaway center, and she helps young women try to get back on their feet. So when Ananda, her former friend, comes back to her out of nowhere after not having spoken with her for 7 years— and asks for her help, her heart goes out to her, even though her brain tells her, no, don't do it. You have to have boundaries. And Ananda just runs over those boundaries.
And the House of Transformation is in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I've spent some time in St. Paul. It's a very interesting city, very different from Minneapolis, the other twin city.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason why you chose that? Do you have some background there?
I lived in St. Paul for a little while. It was a really artsy place,
mm-hmm.
and I like how down to earth it felt,
mm.
and the people there too. I love Minnesotans, and just how they're full of life and love, and they just are up for adventure. So I kind of wanted that kind of a background, but, I certainly didn't want to, put Dayton, Ohio on the map for this one just quite yet. I wanted a little bit of a bigger city.
Oh, so maybe in another book it might be Dayton?
I think it's quite possible.
Okay. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Astrea Taylor. We're talking about her novel House of Transformation, and we'll have some more to talk about here coming up in just a moment. But first, this message. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm joined in studio today by Astrea Taylor. Her novel is House of Transformation. And when this rock star, Ananda, shows up unexpectedly at her old friend's doorstep, her former friend, Mag, she brings all her problems with her, and I'm not going to say what happens after they get together, but there's a lot of tension there, and then we end up with another woman involved, a woman named Hayden, and I'd like to talk a little bit about her because I like her.
She's my favorite character. She's young. She's tech savvy. She knows what the people are using and saying, and she kind of helps Ananda reconnect to her fan base to promote her self-esteem and to get her back on the map as a non-crazy celebrity, not jumping on the couch at Oprah's, you know, more like a down-to-earth regular person. So she starts that conversations with the fans, and she really helps to increase Ananda's appeal once again and support.
I like the currency of this story because the social media aspect of it is big, and I'm guessing that you worked that in as you went along because it kept expanding as you were writing the story. When you initially started the story, it really didn't even exist, did it?
When I was initially writing the story, people didn't carry cell phones everywhere. So it's been technology has made a lot of leaps and bounds in the past 10 years.
We also have – do we talk about the Grammys at all?
No, but that's a great point. There's a – the Ananda is contractually obligated to perform at the Grammys, and she can't afford to back out of it. So that's kind of the big – point in the book. You have to get her sober before the Grammys.
Right. And unfortunately, you have that sort of rogue electron floating around out there, Kitty, right? Kitty is she's the devil's advocate. She's the one who – she's not in the story that much. But when she shows up, you kind of go,
mm-hmm.
And I like Kitty's job. How'd you come up with this job that Kitty's doing?
Oh, I thought that would be a good job to be a narrator on the air.
For audiobooks,
right? For audiobooks, yeah.
Well, I thought that was very cool.
Well, somebody has to do that job. And
well, it's a very hard job.
It is. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine.
Mm-hmm. So Kitty's very professional, but she likes her substances too.
Yeah, she's very wild. She's that friend that you have that's like, blow off studying. Let's go out drinking tonight. Come on. You deserve it. You've worked really hard lately.
The bad influence.
Haven't you always wanted to go to this one thing? Let's do it. I'll pay for it.
Well, I need to point out, Astrea, that you are the first author out of many writers that we've had on this program who, as far as I know, I could declare does something that no one else has done out of that entire group, and that is you are a fire dancer. Tell us about that. I'm sure we've got listeners out there who have probably seen you perform and they're not aware that you're the same person.
That's probably true. I came back to Ohio in 2004 and I started, or maybe it was 2005, and I started Soul Fire Tribe with a couple of people. It's a really funny story. When I came back to town, I didn't have a job, but I was living somewhere. And then I got a job. But then my job wasn't going to give me a paycheck before rent was due. So I said, I have to make some money. I'll teach fire dance classes. Like, I did this on the road for 2 years. And so I put up posters. And my first class, I think I had a dozen people. And I charged a sliding scale. And we kept doing it. And they were learning. And I made rent. And then a gig presented itself. And so we came up with a name. And, you know, we did a charity gig, the Masquerade, the AIDS Resource Center, mm-hmm. Ohio, their annual gig thing. And it was really fun. And I said, you know, I want to keep doing this with these people. And we performed a lot in Yellow Springs. We do a lot of charity events. And it's really fun. I was we have a lot of co-leaders. I've been one of those ones for the longest time.
Some of our listeners are probably scratching their heads and saying, okay, what is a fire dancer? What do you do?
We have a lot of different fire toys. We have these balls of fire on chains we call poi. We have fire hula hoops. It's basically a hula hoop with six or five different spokes coming out of it. And out of those spokes, you have fire. Mm-hmm. There are also the fire staves, which are those sticks with two fire on each end. But we also make a lot of our own fire toys as well. We make fire crowns we put on our head. They look very dangerous, and mm-hmm. they are dangerous. We make fire skirts. We made fire fans, and we've bought fire fans before. But really, you know, we really love playing with fire because it's dangerous and it's beautiful. And the thing is, we practice a lot. This isn't something that anyone can just do at home necessarily, just with no practice. But we really like to give a transcendent experience, if we can, to the audience. So that's what we really work toward.
Mm. Well, I've seen a number of these performances, and they are really quite impressive.
Thank you.
My guest is Estrella Taylor. Her book is House of Transformation. How is writing a novel like fire dancing?
Well, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of artistry and sculpting. When I fire dance, I practice my music over and over with the choreography that I want to do at that time. And writing a novel is similar. You have to kind of sculpt the way that you want things to flow. You know, you want to save your best tricks for the highest moments and, you know, use your best words at the right moments. You don't want to give away things too quickly. You kind of want the show to build a little bit as well.
Sounds like you were ready for that question.
I've just been doing this a while.
Okay. And is there another book then that you alluded to the fact that there's a second book that maybe you're working on that's in progress? Is that something that you want to talk about?
Sure. The book that I'm working on right now, I started it back in 2005. And basically, I was inspired by traveling circuses. I was on the road myself for 2 years doing fire dancing. And I really got this feel of the road, you know, Jack Kerouac and everything. And it's something that's hard to explain. So I wanted to capture that in a novel form, but not having the road be the main story, just having it be a sub-story. So it's called The Carnal Vow, and it's the story of this guy named Michael who's a ringleader, but he's a reluctant ringleader. He has to take over this circus that he doesn't really want to do. It's his family business. And there's an economic recession. And he's in love with the aerialist, of course. And so he makes a wish on what he thinks is a star, but it actually turns out to be the planet Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And he unknowingly invites a gaggle of love goddesses into his dilemma. And they make a mess out of everything. I like to say it's like Midsummer Night's Dream meets Moulin Rouge.
Oh. Well, it sounds like you're pretty far along on this.
I've done a lot of outlining, mm-hmm. But I've actually had to rewrite it several times because the plot wasn't compelling enough. But now I think I'm at a good place. So, yeah, I'm starting to write this right now.
And has the experience with this first book given you a whole list of things to do a different way or do differently with the second book?
Yeah, you know, I'm a list-oriented kind of person. I like to make lists and get things done and cross them off lists. And that's how I'm approaching the second novel. With the first novel, The House of Transformation, people just told me, oh, if you want to write, just do it. It's okay. You don't have to know how to do it. You just do it. And that's good advice to start writing. But I don't think it was good for me because I really wanted to make sure that this was going to be something that was worthy of my time and worthy of other people's time to read. So I had to go back and outline a lot and to make sure that I caught all the plot points that I wanted to catch and to make sure that I wasn't letting the book fall flat in certain places.
Are you someone who craves structure? Do you have like stuff on the wall that you're looking at? Or?
It's all in spreadsheets.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I like structure a lot. I also like looking at the structure and then turning on the other part of my brain, mm-hmm. and working with that. Because really, I think what everyone likes to do when they pick up a book is they just want to go into a waking dream, one that you know, takes them over with their senses and their imagination, but one that they can remember. So that's what I try to do with my book, my writing.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Estrella Taylor. Her new novel is House of Transformation. And we have some very wild things that happen in the story, and I'm not going to spoil it for readers by giving all this stuff away. But we have one guy in here who is a photographer, and he's not the the greaseball. But he's this guy who gets to know these women and kind of attaches himself to these women. And then I think we've seen this happen in our lives many times where someone who we don't really like very much, who's kind of insignificant and not important, becomes more and more important, and you just can't get rid of them.
Yeah, that's that guy's character to a T. He just leeches right on, and everyone else likes him, but Mag really doesn't. She kind of sees through him. She thinks he's kind of not worth Ananda's time. But one of my favorite things about Ananda is that she sees the potential in people.
What was his name, Jared?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So she sees potential in Jared. I like to say that, you know, she sees the choreographies inside a musician's brain before they're written. She sees the painting inside an artist's head. And she saw something in Jared, so Jared stuck around.
And Ananda has a real talent. She really is a good singer. She really does know how to perform. She's got charisma. But then she's got these other issues, and she's like all of us. She's a human being with with flaws, with gifts, the whole bag.
Yeah, I was happy to hear that feedback from you and other people about how well-rounded the characters were, how they felt really human and their interactions felt pretty genuine. And thank you. That's a great compliment.
I think when you're writing something that is realistic like this is in 99% of the ways, I mean, we do have supernatural paranormal elements, which you've alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, those are real, too.
Yeah, I would have to say that a lot of people do believe in ghosts. And I have my own ghost stories. You probably do, too. Especially when you get that weird prickly feeling on the back of your neck. So I was trying to include some of that into the novel to make it just a little bit strange, a little bit different. I think that every one of my novels is going to have something a little bit strange like that.
I'm getting this Irish vibe. Is there something Irish going on here?
I don't know.
No? Okay. I think of Ireland when I think of ghost stories and legends and the whole Celtic thing. Don't ask me why, but I do.
Yeah, maybe that's the ghost that's following you around.
I don't know. I think my ghost is probably Lithuanian, actually. I see that you've got some events coming up. You're going to be signing copies of your books. You're doing the rollout, and these are a little bit down the road, so you're going to want to mark on your calendar here. You've got an event at the Epic Bookshop here in Yellow Springs, and that's a book signing, and I assume a talk, and that's at Friday, March 11th at 6:30 in the evening. And is that going to be the first ever book signing, or do you have something that might come up before that?
That's going to be the very first one.
That's pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah. You know, every time I get one of these milestones, it's very exciting and something I've always wanted to do.
Cool. And then the following day, you'll be in Xenia for an early afternoon signing at Blue Jacket Books in Xenia, and that's at 2 o'clock on March 12th. That's Saturday. And those are a couple of the bookstores that have the book in stock now, right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. What was it like to publish the book? What was that experience like? I mean, to actually get something, I assume it was available as an e-book first, and then to actually have this thing that I'm holding in my hand, what was that like?
Ebook publishing was a little bit hard because basically Kindle reformats your book for you, and you can't pick your fonts, and you can't pick the color of the page or the anything like that. But with this paperback copy that we've printed out, I was able to pick everything about it. I was able to pick cream-colored pages, a little bit thicker page, and the font that I chose was something that I felt really went with the story. It was a little bit more elegant, but at the same time, very readable.
You talked about the formatting with the Kindle, with the Amazon ebook platform. Is that something that you actually did yourself?
I did. I asked a few people if they wanted to be my agent. I only reached out to about 8 agencies. I didn't want to have to do it myself because I think everything looks better when it's professionally made. But when I did the final product and looked at it, I was actually really happy with it. So I have to say that self-publishing isn't all bad. It's just a little bit more work for the writer who may have to be multifaceted.
Well, I know I mentioned this to you before in an email, but the other day I was in downtown Yellow Springs and I saw your friend, your friend who's a fire dancer with you, and she was reading your book. She was sitting at a table, and I didn't realize at the time, because I had just gotten the book myself, that you had dedicated the book to her. And she was sitting there at a table, and she was reading it, and she was having so much fun. It was so cool to actually see her. And then I realized after the fact that the book was dedicated to her, and I thought, wow, what a great reading experience she was having.
Yeah, you know, she really helped me. She inspired me to keep going. When I had a few stumbling blocks, she picked me up and said, yeah, this will be great. You know, who cares about that thing? Keep going. So without her, this book wouldn't have been published. So I had to give this book to her.
Well,
in that way.
Everybody needs a friend like that.
Yeah, and this book is about best friends and friendships, and she's my bestie. So,
well, when I was looking you up on Amazon, when I looked up the book there, and I think you also mentioned it at the back of the print version, it said something about you working on a book about fire dancing. Is that something off in the back burner, so to speak?
It is in the back burner. Crystal and I have had some, for lack of a better word, transformative experiences with fire dancing. It's brought us out of our shell and into an artistic place in our lives. And so we really like what we do, you know, when we try to bring this level of artistry to people. And we think that, you know, when we perform, it's a gift to people. We try to make it a gift and not, you know, about us. It's about, like, spreading this joy to other people. Mm. So we each have a couple of stories that we've shared over the years about how much we have been moved by seeing this fire dance and how we've changed over the years ourselves. So we think that we're going to try to put something together like that and probably do try an ebook and see how it goes.
Well, that's different. I bet there's never been a book written like that.
You know, I haven't seen any. And no.
I would think you would know.
I look for them all the time.
Well, it's really been fun talking to you about your new book.
Thank you so much. There's one other thing that I'd like to mention. And that
you just
is,
go right ahead.
I'm giving 5% of my profits off the top to a charity. It's a local runaway shelter called the Sunrise Center.
Oh, wow.
In Dayton. And it was my inspiration for Mag's, the place where Mag works, the New Beginning Center. And I think that's a great place. They don't have a coffee house there, but they have a shop where they sell dog biscuits that they make themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that place is just really cool, and I like to support them. And I think that they're really well-deserving of this.
So once again, there's something in the book that is inspired by something real, kind of like those paintings that Mag likes to do of the women with blue faces. I'm just kidding.
And the college at the end, too, near the end, that's an homage to Antioch.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, we really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. Estrella Taylor has been our guest, and she was kind enough to come out all the way to Yellow Springs to do this interview in studio. And we talked about her debut novel, House of Transformation, and her upcoming novel that she's working on right now, and her book about fire dancing, and all kinds of stuff. Thanks for listening. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.